This is Amherst Eclectic, and I sort of tripped over some things today, like I typically do. I saw an article, well, not an article, I saw a video that talked about how people think, and I've seen this opinion before, but it talked about how people think that male narcissists who basically have relationships with women and abuse women are actually homosexuals who hate women and won't admit that they're homosexuals, are afraid to admit it or publicly admit it, and so, you know, they're angry about that, so they abuse women. So, you know, then I had, you know, then there was a therapist that actually confirmed that within this video. The opinion that he found online, that, you know, narcissists don't really care what sex you are, just so that you're putting them up on a pedestal and making them feel like they are godlike. So, and they really don't care if it's a man or a woman that they're having sex with, because as long as they're validating them as in their narcissist ways. Okay, so that's just one opinion. So I thought, well, you know, I want to get some research on this. And I started looking it up, and I found this article. And it's basically about knowing the kind of narcissists that you're dealing with and their symptoms. And they said that there are four types of narcissists, which I've heard about narcissism, but, you know, and I'm sure I knew there were different types, but I never had them run down to say there was only four types. So, this is an actual article from a psychology magazine, so, with a psychiatrist and therapist who write these things that are, they're certified, so, I always like to have that if I'm talking about something. I like to have some real concrete evidence, proven evidence, scientific evidence, right? Okay, so narcissists you're dealing with and the symptoms. Types of narcissists have different behavior, but they share two core symptoms. Okay, that's how the article starts out. Another reason I wanted to look this up is I found I came up in social media that, and this is while I'm online checking, you know, my own social media, but a story came up, and I'm not sure what city it was in. Can't remember if it was Atlanta or where it was, but there was a young lady about 20 years old who was invited to go to a party. She's a 3-year-old son, so she had to find people to watch. She's only 20 years old, and this is an African-American young lady, and the group that she was going to meet were all African-Americans, and there was about 8 people, and I think there was maybe 2 or 3 women, and maybe 5 or 6 men, and they were going to a party. She'd have been invited by this one guy to come to this party. Long story short, it gets pretty gruesome. You might want to fast forward through this if you haven't heard this story and you don't like hearing gruesome things. But when she got there, they, you know, all ganged up on her, stripped her of her clothes. Apparently, it wasn't the only place that they had her. They took her to some other person's place too, right? They handcuffed her, and they started to, you know, say awful things to her, spit on her. They were torturing her, beating her, all 9 yards, right? And they were taping it all on their phones. They were recording it on their phones. Long story short, they all raped her. They all had guns. They were pointing at her to get her to do what they wanted her to do. Men and women. She was sodomized, you know, men with their penis, women with other tools sodomized her. It was pretty brutal. And she was raped, beat, tortured, brought to 2 separate places. I mean, this was very, you know, they knew what they were going to do, they knew how they were going to do it kind of thing, right? And apparently they all were laughing and thought it was funny. And they put it up on social media. I mean, what is wrong with these kind of people? And it kind of brought home to me, like, how narcissists are, they're sociopaths. They're psychopaths. You have to be really careful who you're dealing with. And unfortunately, this girl was only 20 years old. I mean, I think of myself at 20, you know, I probably was a little more aware than most 20-year-olds because I'd grown up in, you know, not exactly a great environment, you know, and I'd seen some things that I knew to protect myself and watch for, so, or I just might have been way more aware than most people when they were kids. I was a really smart kid, and did really well in school, but I also was had really, you know, heightened common sense, and I don't know why I just did. So, yeah, but when I think of myself at that age, this poor girl, you know, I mean, she just had no choice. And then after they tortured her for hours, apparently, and put all these videos up, they execution style shot her in the back of the head. And maybe they didn't think they were going to get caught. Maybe this is something that they've done many times before and gotten away with it. And maybe, you know, the police didn't really say in the report. Maybe it was on the dark web. You know, there's a lot of people who are paid to do snuff films, which is they have sex with somebody and then they kill them. And they make a lot of money with that because there's a lot of sick mofos out there that like that sort of thing. And it's something I don't like to talk about because it's very disturbing. But it is out there. And people should be aware of it. And this is why you need to be careful. And this is why we need to take care of runaway teens. This is why we need to take care of homeless people. Because that leaves them vulnerable to these kind of monsters. You know, the kind of monsters that go out and, you know, set homeless people on fire. Just because. You know, these are the kind of people that do that. Now, apparently all eight people have been caught. If that's truly the only eight who were there doing this, since it was two different places. And they have them all in custody. Probably because, you know, the other ones, you know, ratted them out because they're not going to go down if, you know, the other ones aren't going to go down, right? And that's the sort of narcissistic thing that someone would do. So this is what I'm talking about when we're talking about sociopathic, psychopathic, narcissistic narcissists, you know, who are mentally ill. I think most people who are narcissistic have a mental illness, whether it be borderline personality, schizophrenia, bipolar. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, say that everyone who has these mental illnesses is a bad person. I think there are different degrees, and also, you know, it's how you grow up, it's your moralities, you know, all those things come into play. But, yeah, there's sociopath, psychopath type people who you just have to stay away from. There's just something wrong with them, you know? And you have to be very careful and protect yourself from those people. It's better to be alone than to go hang out with a bunch of idiots, right? To be in a pack of wolves in sheep's clothing. And then this is how you find out. The way this poor girl found out. That she was hanging out with a bunch of people who were setting her up. Setting her up to do something to her. Or maybe, you know, they just decided one night. You know, maybe it was on a whim. Who knows? So, okay. There are four, maybe she broke up with somebody in that group. Maybe one of the guys didn't like the way he treated her, or she treated him. Or maybe she stood up to somebody, you know, maybe the leader of the pack. And so they decided this is what they were going to do to her. I mean, it's cruel how people are. And then sometimes you get into a group of people. I've been in groups of people, you know, people who you would think were sane, and they can be really mean and to make you feel bad. I've been in family units. You have to stay away from people. You know, I have people in my family that I just stay away from them. You know, I have friend groups that I have totally disconnected from. Because, you know, when people get in a pack like that, when they get in a bunch of people together, they decide, that's one thing that I've seen about sociology and psychology. when people are in a group, they decide to pick on one person. It happens all the time. And that person becomes the target all the time for everybody. And it's almost like people pick on that person so that no one else gets picked on. So that person gets, you know, all of the negativity directed at them. I personally do not do that, but, and I don't like it when it's done to somebody, right? But it happens a lot. And then when you're, if you stand up for that person or you tell everybody to shut up and stop picking on them, then they'll turn it on you. And then that person that they were picking on will start picking on you because they don't want to be the person picked on anymore. Humans are weird. You know, this is sociology, psychology stuff I've been studying. So, okay. Now, there are four major types of narcissism, according to this basis. Researchers have been hunting for the core of narcissism that all narcissists share, despite varying symptoms and severity. Recently, two research teams have identified a common trait. Narcissists use a variety of tactics and defenses to keep you insecure and ensure that their status and their needs are met. It's easy to be confused, but it's extremely important to understand and spot which type of narcissist you are dealing with. Okay? First of all, there's the grandiose narcissist. Although there are different degrees and types of narcissism that share that the required symptoms described in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, the DSM, for years, research mainly focused on the familiar. Exhibitionist narcissists who seek the limelight. And these are the boastful, grandiose narcissists who are public figures and are recognizable in films, etc. They're the type of narcissist personality disorder envisioned by the DSM, right? We can all spot those charming, attention-seeking extroverts whose vanity and boldness are at times obnoxious and shameless. They're self-absorbed, entitled, callous, exploitative, authoritarian, and aggressive. Some are physically abusive. These unempathetic, arrogant narcissists think highly of themselves, but spare no disdain for all others around them. Helped by their extroversion, they report high self-esteem and satisfaction with their lives, despite the pain they cause others. Because they outwardly seek acclaim, attention, and domination, grandiose narcissism is externalized. Even in love, they seek power by game playing. Many do maintain relationships, notwithstanding the lack of intimacy and the unhappiness of their partners, who are easily seduced by their charisma and boldness. So, all of those game playing people that you're out there with, as soon as they start playing games with you, drop them, because this is who they are. They are a narcissist, and they don't care about anybody else. You know, to me, I don't think narcissists even care about themselves, because they have this low self-esteem. That's what comes, you know, that's what I see as creating narcissism. They have to boast, they have to, you know, they have to make themselves feel better. They have to have you worship them in order for them to feel good. They need the other people in order to have any kind of self-worth. They don't have any self-worth for themselves, right? They know who they are. They know they're not very great, right? Okay. So, the next one is the vulnerable narcissist. A lesser-known type of narcissism is vulnerable narcissism, also referred to as closet or introverted or covert narcissism. I've heard that before, haven't you? Covert narcissism. Like their grandiose kin, vulnerable narcissists are self-absorbed, entitled, exploitative, unempathetic. See, that's the biggest thing. When someone doesn't have empathy for others, that's a narcissist, right? That's like a big red flag. Okay, they're unempathetic, they're manipulative, and they're aggressive. But they fear criticism so much that they shy away from attention. From attention, and individuals of both types of narcissism often lack autonomy, experience imposter syndromes, and have a weak sense of self or self-alienating, and have an inability to master their environment. Have you heard, I have heard actors say many, many times that they feel like they have an imposter syndrome. So, red flag, they're probably a narcissist. If they feel like they have, imposter syndrome means you don't deserve what you have or you're not who you are. Someone's going to figure you out, right? Someone's going to figure out who you really are. And all the facade that you're putting out to the world is going to come down. And everybody's going to know that you don't deserve what you have. That kind of thing. That's imposter syndrome. So they feel like they're imposters in their own world. And I hear a lot of actors say that. So anyway, let's see. They have a weak sense of self, and they self-alienate and have an inability to master their own environment. However, vulnerable narcissists experience these things to a markedly greater extent. In contrast to grandiose narcissists, rather than feeling confident and self-satisfied, vulnerable narcissists are insecure and unhappy with their lives. Funny, I see all narcissists as being insecure and unhappy. They don't really tell people that, but you can kind of see it. They experience more distress, anxiety, guilt, depression, hypersensitivity, and shame. They're conflicted, holding both inflated and negative irrational views of themselves, the latter of which they project onto other people, their lives, and their future. Their negative emotionality depicts a bitter, neurotic, averse attitude towards personal growth. They require reinforcement for their grandiose self-image and are highly defensive when perceived criticism triggers their negative opinions of themselves. So that's why they hate criticism. Because then it just validates what they really feel about themselves, right? Okay. So they can't take any constructive criticism. You know, I've seen narcissists who lose their freaking mind if somebody criticizes them. They just blow up, you know, because they cannot take any criticism because they need everyone around them to think they're perfect. They need everyone around them to praise them at all times. And in fact, they're so attracted to those crazy people who are, you know, constantly praising them, yet they know, you know, they don't give any of that back to anybody, right? Okay. Unlike extroverted narcissists, they lack positive relationships. So, instead of boldly dominating people, they're threat-oriented and distrustful. Their attachment style is more avoidant and anxious. And I see that a lot when I'm looking up, narcissism or narcissistic behavior, avoidant personality comes up too. So, it's attached, right? Okay, they withdraw from others with hostile blame and resentment, internalizing their narcissism. Empathetic codependents feel sympathetic and want to rescue them from their misery, but end up self-sacrificing and feeling responsible for them. That's pretty much what Al-Anon is. You know, it's a bunch of drug addict, alcoholic, you know, narcissists. These type of narcissists. And codependents in Al-Anon are the ones that are always trying to save them, right? Feel sorry for them. Oh, these poor wounded people. Well, they're not wounded people. They can take care of themselves, right? Okay, the communal narcissist. This is another one. Even more difficult to identify is the third type of narcissism. It was only named recently, communal narcissism. Communal narcissists value warmth, agreeableness, and relatedness. They see themselves and want to be seen by others as the most trustworthy and supportive person and try to achieve this through friendliness and kindness. They're outgoing, like the grandiose narcissist. However, whereas the grandiose narcissist wants to be seen as the smartest and most powerful, a communal narcissist wants to be seen as the most giving and helpful. Communal narcissist's vain selflessness is no less selfish than that of the grandiose narcissist. They both share similar motives for grandiosity, esteem, entitlement, and power, although they each employ different behaviors to achieve them. When their hypocrisy is discovered, it's a bigger fall. So, an example for this is, during the whole, school walkout for guns, to get rid of guns, during that whole walkout thing that they did, March for Our Lives, there was, you know, I volunteered at a school, a music school, a art school, and they got together this school walkout. Well, the one student who was heading it, was in charge of the whole thing. She pretty much put it all together. She did it all. She did, the march at the school, and she also did a rally down on the city square. And she put it all together. But there was another girl, they were only supposed to be, juniors and seniors who were supposed to be doing this. But there was a freshman who insisted on being part of it, even though she wasn't allowed to. And she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and then finally, you know, she had wealthy parents who stepped in and pushed the principal to let her do it. Probably gave money to the school or something, I don't know. And then she started taking credit for putting the rally downtown together at the city square. And she basically made everybody think that she put it together when really she hadn't done it. And when I talked to some of the other students, you know, when we were doing other functions later in the year, they asked me who had done it, and I told them it was the other girl who did it. And they're like, I knew it, I knew that other girl did it. And I said, well, she wasn't even supposed to be there. She was too young to be there doing it, and her parents pushed her, and I'm pretty sure they gave the school some money to get her to be able to let her do it. But I can tell you, this girl was not. She was crazy, and she knew that I knew what she did, so every time she would walk by me, she would look down, like in shame, but she wanted everybody to think that she put it all together when she did nothing. Like, there were several times when we were supposed to have sign-making parties, and we were supposed to have meetings, and she would never put it on a day when, places were open. Like, we meet at the library was closed. If we were going to meet at another place, that place. She never called to check. Or maybe she did, because she didn't want to do the real work, right? She never really called anybody else. So what ended up happening is this girl and me and other people would have to call all the people that were supposed to go meet at these places that were closed and tell them, it's closed, you can't meet there, we're going to have to meet somewhere else. So we ended up doing all the work. Right? So that's another thing that narcissists do. They figure out a way to make other people do the work, and then they take the credit, right? And she just kept doing stuff like that. And even years after, she was still getting credit for having done the rally downtown when she did nothing to do it. So, and the only thing she did was she grabbed the mic on that day when we were down there and introduced everybody, because she wanted it to seem like she was the one who put it together when really it was the other girl. And to this day, people are so mad at her, and they know she didn't do it, right? They know she didn't put anything together. They know it's the other person, the other girl, who put it all together. They know that she took credit for something she shouldn't have taken credit for. But when, I think, what's his name, Beto O'Rourke came into town and wanted to meet the person who put that rally together, they called her, not the other girl. Well, the principal who got paid by the parents called her and not the other girl to meet with Beto O'Rourke. So once again, she got credit for something she didn't do. It was so bad. That's the kind of narcissist they're talking about here. The one that wants to feel like she's giving and communal and right? And wants to get credit for things that they don't do. All right, so that's what it reminds me of. Okay, the next one is the malignant narcissist. Malignant narcissists are considered to be at the extreme end of the continuum of types of narcissism due to their cruelty and aggressiveness. They're paranoid, immoral, and sadistic. Woo-hoo. Okay. They find pleasure in creating chaos and taking people down. These narcissists, or this girl might have been a malignant narcissist, maybe, huh? They find pleasure in creating chaos and taking people down. These narcissists aren't necessarily grandiose, extroverted, or neurotic, but are closely related to psychopathy, the dark triad, and the antisocial personality disorder. Fluctuating ego states among types of narcissism. If you have a hard time identifying which of the types of the narcissists they're dealing with, it might be because grandiose narcissists oscillate between states of grandiosity and vulnerability. For example, grandiose narcissists may show vulnerability and emotionality, usually anger, when their success is thwarted or their self-concept is under attack. Greater grandiosity indicates greater instability and likelihood of fluctuation. There's little evidence that vulnerable narcissists exhibit grandiosity. The search for the core of narcissism. Using new techniques, recent studies have attempted to isolate a singular unifying trait among narcissists. Researchers examine narcissism by testing distinct personality traits. Two recent models emerged. One is based on personality, and the other is an integrative transitional approach. The trifurcated model shows that narcissism centers on these three personalities traits, agentic extroversion, disagreeableness, and neuroticism. Agentic extroverts are authoritative and bold go-getters who pursue acclaim, achievement, and leadership positions. Of the big five personality traits, disagreeableness is the only one common to both types. The model illuminates the core of narcissism to be interpersonal antagonism shared by grandiose and vulnerable narcissists alike. It's characterized by manipulation, hostility, entitlement, callousness, and anger. I think every narcissist uses anger, but okay. Vulnerable and grandiose narcissists express antagonism differently. The former are more hostile and distrustful, so that's the vulnerable. And the latter are more immodest and domineering, grandiose. Okay. The spectrum model. Narcissists differing personalities express diverse qualities at various times. This model captures a fluid, flexional analysis that is more representative of real life. The greater a person's grandiosity, the lower is their vulnerability, and vice versa. More entitlement and risk-taking increase professional and interpersonal difficulties. The greater the vulnerability, the further away, lower is their grandiosity. The takeaways, in sum, narcissism exists on a spectrum, ranging from domineering and extroverted to introverted and neurotic. The core features of narcissism are antagonism, self-importance, and entitlement, making narcissists disagreeable, uncooperative partners, and work associates. Because other personality types can be antagonistic, I prefer the spectrum model that singles out self-important entitlement as the core of narcissism, thus distinguishing it from sociopathy and borderline personality disorders, among others. Grandiose narcissists present a mixed bag. While they feel and function better than vulnerable narcissists and can be socially engaging when they choose, their antagonism and entitlement creates problems and jeopardizes relationships. If they attend psychotherapy, it should focus on their antagonism and their entitlement. On the other hand, vulnerable narcissists need help managing their perceptions, moods, and emotions. They resemble people with borderline personality disorder and would benefit from a dialectical behavioral therapy, which is effective in reducing antagonism. Schema-focused psychotherapy and cognitive behavioral therapy are helpful for both types to reduce shame and anger. Whatever type of narcissist you care about, the relationship is hurtful. Rather than getting your needs met, you're undermined and drained from dealing with frequent criticism, callousness, hostility, demands, and entitled expectations. Don't spend your efforts trying to please or change a narcissist. Instead, start recovery to rebuild your self-esteem and your autonomy so you're more resilient whether you stay or you go. If you're undecided, get some individual psychotherapy and use the tools in dealing with a narcissist to improve your dynamic and determine the prognosis of your relationship. Whew! That's, you know, that's pretty detailed and pretty accurate, I think, about narcissism. There's different levels. I think there's even shadow and gray areas between those descriptions. There's four descriptions of narcissism. I can tell you that I have seen a lot of narcissists in my life, you know, and people are like, well, not everybody's a narcissist. There's a lot of people who are narcissists, you know. When people come to me with, you know, with descriptions and telling me about certain things that people have done to them, you know, I've told them either you're dealing with a sociopath or a psychopath, you need to kind of figure this out, or you're dealing with a narcissist at some level, right? Or you're dealing with, you know, an other kind of mental illness, like they mentioned in this article. You could be dealing with bipolar, you could be dealing with borderline personality, you could be dealing with an addictive personality who is an active addict, right? There's a lot of reds and gray, red flags and gray areas, right? So you have to figure out what's going on, and sometimes that's really hard to figure out because these people know they're sick, they know they have a problem, and they're trying to hide it from you. Because they need to get from you what they want. And their mental illness, which I think narcissism is a type of mental illness, is, you know, is keeping them from being honest, right? And keeping them from telling you what's really going on because they know they have a problem. I don't think anyone who has any kind of issue doesn't know at the core that they are screwed up in some way, right? I mean, I can even say that I've been a codependent in the past and that I've had to really check myself on that. I've really had to set boundaries, learn how to set boundaries. But that came from growing up in the way that I grew up, right? And I know that the reason I became who I was is because of the background that I had. So you kind of have to go through all of these understandings of what psychology is. And I say this to people all the time. We are all pretty much textbook. There has been enough studies done in sociology, in psychology, in psychotherapy. There's been enough therapy done with enough people over the years. You know, we are, unfortunately, as humans, pretty predictable. And so you will find yourself reading about something if you go into any kind of sociology or psychology studies, which, you know, in college you've had to take psychology classes, many of us did, and in order, it was required because you need to have a basis of psychology to understand how to deal with people in the workplace, right? So they have you take those psychology classes for a reason. You know, people are like, why are we taking this psychology class? That's why, because you need to have an understanding. And when you're reading through those psychology things, you know, studies that you do through the year in that class, man, it's amazing how textbook everyone is. You know, they go down the checklist of different types of people and what they do and how they act and how they react. And, you know, and you go, wow, I know somebody just like this. And they have every checkpoint on this in this textbook, right? Because, again, you know, they have studied human behavior and they know what happens. Now, it may sway one way or the other, but you can pretty much find what you need in a textbook of psychology, right? When you are trying to figure out what somebody's going to do. It's just like when you go to a battered women's shelter, they will give people these packages, right? They will give the women who are being battered, or they'll give relatives who are trying to get somebody out of a situation and trying to show them that they are in a battered, abusive relationship. They give them these packets, and there's a checklist about, you know, whether you're in an abusive relationship or not. And here's what people are doing to you, da 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 da. Here's what, how you feel, here's what they do, here's what you do, here's how they feel. And you start reading those packets and you go, oh my gosh. You know, it's like a textbook for these people. I'm in an abusive relationship, right? So it sort of validates to these women that they need to get out. Because here's the next things that are going to happen. 9 times out of 10, when people are in an abusive relationship like that, and they're, you know, they're being physically abused, they're being psychologically, financially, whatever, abused, the next steps sometimes are not great steps, right? Because if somebody can abuse you, manipulate you, control you in that way, they stop seeing you as a human being. They start seeing you as a possession, something that they own. And many women end up murdered, or almost murdered, right? And not just the woman. You know, the children end up being murdered. And we see that in the news all the time. And it's sad to say that one of the number one things for women's death, it's not just heart disease and cancer, it's murder by a partner. It's the top three of deaths for women. The most deaths: heart disease, cancer, and murder by a partner. Not another disease, the disease of narcissism, sociopathy, and psychopathy in an abusive partner, right? So this is another reason I like doing talks about narcissism, about psychological events, and because this is something that happens in sexual intimate relationships. Many of these narcissists will use sex, will use intimacy, will use love bombing, will use these kind of things to reel you in. So you need to understand the different types of narcissism so that you can see it coming out yet before you get involved too deeply. And a lot of them will rush you into a relationship because they know who they are. They know what they want. They need you to validate them. They need you to feed them, right? It's not about you. It's about you being the supply for them. You giving them what they need, right? And if that happens, if the relationship is one-sided and you end up only giving them what they need, that's an abusive relationship, and it's probably a narcissistic person that you're in that relationship with. So it's especially today on, you know, International Women's Day, and we're in the month of, you know, Women's History Month. I think it's really important to do these kind of stories and these kind of podcasts that women can hear. And if you are in an abusive relationship, you know, there is a new number that you can call. It's not, you know, they say it's a suicide hotline. It's not just for suicide. It's not just a suicide hotline. 988. You know how you dial 911 for the police? You can dial 988, and that'll get you in contact with somebody who can put you in contact with a battered woman's shelter, a safe place that you can get away to, counseling. They can, you know, it's also for people who, you know, if you are feeling like you are suicidal, you can call that number, right? Since suicides have gone up. But it's also for people who need help. So it's also for domestic violence. It's also for, you know, I mean, if you have a somebody who's coming at you with a gun, that's a 911 situation, right? But if you're feeling like you're suicidal, you can call 988. If you're feeling like you are in danger in a domestic violence situation, you can call 988. They will put you in touch with a domestic violence counselor and also a shelter, and they will find a way to get you out of that situation. And sometimes you can't leave right away. You gotta figure out a way to get out and make sure that you take everything you need so that you're not going to lose your finances and things like that. You know, it depends on where you're at. You know, if you're in a very abusive situation where he might kill you the next day, or she, you know, because women abuse too, might kill you the next day, then they'll get you out of that situation. They'll come and get you. They'll come and get your kids. They'll get you out of that situation. Now there are shelters, many, many shelters across the country where women can stay and they're safe. And they will get you a lawyer for free who will take, you know, make sure you get a restraining order and make sure that if you have any charges you need to press against that person, you can, etc. So definitely, if you've heard anything today about narcissism, if you are in a relationship with a narcissist, it's probably going to go downhill, and it's probably going to go downhill fast. I just don't see any purpose in staying in a relationship with a narcissist, because everything is to serve them and everything is to serve what they need. And, you know, why would you want to be with someone like that? There's no give, there's no take. Well, there's all taking, you know. There's not that give and take back and forth, which is the way a relationship should be. You know, sometimes someone gives, sometimes someone takes, right? And you have to have that in a relationship. If it's all you giving and all that other person taking, you're probably with a abusive narcissist, and it's probably just going to get worse. And I hate to say this about narcissism, but most abusers are narcissists, who are probably leading to sociopathy and psychopathy. And I just, you know, I know they try to make it a different level, narcissism at a different level, but I just think narcissism is a byproduct of psychopathy and sociopathy. And I just think that, you know, there are a lot of people who have those traits. It's particularly nowadays, you know, with, you know, social media and everybody's on their phone and nobody's really connected as much as it used to be. I mean, you were forced to be connected. I think that this kind of environment is creating more narcissists. I think video games are creating more narcissists because people are alone and they're only dealing with video games and they're in this other reality and they don't need real people anymore, which is why we're getting robots and sex doll, you know, robotic sex dolls, and men are having, you know, AI, falling in love with AI people on Instagram. Like, can't you tell when it's an AI people? Come on. It's pretty obvious when it's an animation that's talking to you. And then these guys are, like, messaging these AI accounts and wanting to go on dates with these AI-created animations. I mean, they're not real. You can see that. So, yeah. I mean, I've gone on, there was an AI account that was creating these men, right? And it was saying, you know, it was saying Prince blah blah blah, and it had some sort of Russian prince name. And I saw it, and the first thing I said is, okay, is this an AI creation? Or are you creating an AI that's supposed to look like a real person that actually existed back in the day? Because there's another woman who does that. She creates AIs of historical figures. She takes as many, paintings and thing, and maybe sculptures of that person. She puts them together, and then she tries to create what that person probably looked like, because we don't have photos of those people, right, from ancient times. So she tries to take what they did provide, sculptures, paintings, and put them together, and then try to figure out what they might have really looked like. And then she has them moving, and she has them smiling, that sort of thing. So that's a really cool way to use AI, right? Or she'll even take old photos and paintings of people and try to put those together. So, you know, that's different. You know, she's trying to show us what they might have looked like, what these real people might have looked like, right? Put some rights to the wrongs that are out there, right? But there are accounts that are, you know, they're making up names, like that account I was talking about. It just kind of came up and I asked, well, is this a real person? Like, was there a prince in Russia somewhere that looked like this and that was his name, and you're just trying to show us what he might have looked like? Or is this made up? And I had to go through a series of 5 questions to the person on that account before they finally said, no, this isn't real, it's AI. They wouldn't answer until I pushed and pushed and pushed, because I wanted them. I figured out it wasn't real because they weren't answering me, right? When somebody doesn't give you a direct answer, you know they're faking stuff, right? And they weren't giving me a direct answer. And so when they didn't give me that direct answer, I pushed them until they finally said, no, this isn't real, this is an AI account. And I wanted to be up there publicly so people would see it, right? So that's why I pushed them. So yeah, we're in this kind of AI created fantasy world. And you know, now they're having Meta, where you get on and you can walk through a city it's just all animated, right? And you meet people while you're in this, you know, when you have your little goggles on and you're in this fake Meta world, right? I mean, that's what we're living with. So more people, I think, are becoming disconnected and self-absorbed, right? Because when you are having relationships, when you're in relationships with people on a daily basis, like people working, you know, from home, they're not having that interaction that they were when they were at work, but they still have to interact with people all day long, right? Real people, in order to get their work done, right? But this meta universe, or these universes that you walk into that aren't real, is disconnecting people from each other. And I think it's getting to the point where some people who have grown up with that, have been in that disconnected world, are wanting to get out of it. And they actually want, they crave, you know, attention from other people. But then you have these type of people that this is turning them, even if they had narcissistic, sociopathic, or psychopathic tendencies, and might have had those kind of worked out of them if they had to be in the real world with real people, right? Now they're getting more magnified because they're not dealing with real people all the time. They're in these little worlds all the time. So I think it's kind of scary, you know, that we're getting more and more, it's making more people narcissistic, it's making more people sociopathic. And it's also bringing up, because we're not connecting on that level, on those personal levels, it's bringing up suicides, and it's bringing up abuse at home of children, and it's bringing up abuse of spouses, etc. So I think that it's very important to be able to see who is a narcissist and who isn't a narcissist, what type of narcissist they are, you know, because I think it's happening, you know, it's becoming more of a problem. Narcissism is becoming more of a problem. And because we're not in community as much as we used to be. So what do you guys think? Like I said, it was just something I tripped over again and just thought, you know, this would be a really good subject matter for what we talk about on here. And very important that you can see who your partner is, that you can see the person that you are having intimate relationships with are. Because it can hurt you when you find out that they're trying to hurt you, right? That they're using you. And to be able to recognize a narcissist out the door is a really good thing. So make sure you go over what the checkpoints are for a narcissist. Make sure that you look this kind of stuff up. Make sure you study it. Because if you are starting a relationship with somebody and you see those red flags, you want to get out of that relationship if it's a narcissist, because it's not going to benefit you ever. It's only going to benefit that narcissist. Until the next time, Amorous Eclectic.